the Buy Local movement in Maine. Why advocates say it's good for you and your community. Buy Local movements the world over actively advocate for consumers to support independent, locally owned businesses. It keeps money in the community, they say. But what does it mean to buy local, and to what extent should we, as thrifty Mainers, pay more for products that we might otherwise buy for less in a big box store or online? I'm Keith Shortall. Today we'll explore the Buy Local movement in Maine and test some of the conventional wisdom about how it works, and what it does for local communities. With me in studio, Garrett Martin, Executive Director of the Maine Center for Economic Policy, and Kristen Smith, President of Portland Buy Local and Brand Ambassador of Planet Dog. In our Bangor studio, Jason Bird, Business Development Officer and Downtown Coordinator for the City of Bangor. And as always, we want to hear from you. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a message on our Facebook page, or give us a call. 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Why buy local? This is Maine Calling. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. You've seen the stickers, probably, depending upon where you live. They say buy local. The message is pretty direct. The idea is pretty simple. But why should we do it? Advocates say that it's good for your local economy. It's a good thing to do to help locally owned independent businesses, that you should support them. But we're going to ask a few questions about this, test this idea. And first of all, though, learn more about what it really is. Kristen Smith, we'll start with you. You're president of Portland Buy Local. It sounds pretty simple, support local business. But what does it really mean, and why do we want to do it?
Well, thank you very much for having me. You know, the Portland Buy Local campaign is really an educational campaign, as you said. We are trying to help support our locally owned businesses. In addition to the job benefits that locally owned businesses provide for our communities, there's a number of other community strengths and benefits that locally owned businesses bring to us. A walkable city, a vibrant city, a unique city that attracts consumers and additional retail dollars to the city, the sort of things that make a community more livable and more attractive to outside dollars is something that is sometimes overlooked in the value of a buy local movement.
And so we'll talk about the jobs part in a minute. But what you're saying is it's not just about transactions and the exchange of merchandise, but it's about a sort of a big open air experience with nice looking shops, with signs, with a community, with other sort of amenities like coffee shops. It's a sort of a downtown movement as opposed to a purchasing directive.
Well, I think it's a combination of both, and those things all come together to make a healthy community. You know, there are studies that show that, you know, when you go to the farmer's market to purchase your food as opposed to a grocery store or even some of the big box stores that are selling more groceries now, your social interactions, you're more, 7 times more likely to have a conversation with a neighbor or another community member. These are the kind of things that tie you to your neighbors and, again, increase the vibrancy and the network and the fabric of the community.
Jason Bird, you're sort of an advocate of a similar thing in the Queen City in Bangor. What's the experience been there, and what's the motivation? Is it the same?
Absolutely the same. And for me, I have the opportunity to work not only in the downtown but also citywide. And for me, it's that sort of developing that community's sort of unique character. When we work with developers or businesses all the time that are looking to sort of develop or come to Bangor, it's not now just about the low cost of labor. It's what is there for their, you know, the families to do. What else is there to do when they're not on the clock? And for us, having that vibrant downtown or having the unique character makes our job of sort of selling the city a lot easier.
Yeah. So again, it's as much the experience as it is keeping dollars, I guess, you know, in the community. But Garrett Martin, is this also about keeping dollars in local economies as opposed to sending them to Bentonville?
Yeah, I think the economic arguments are pretty interesting here. You know, if you think about the way we've talked about growing strong economies, for so many years, the name of the game was try and create an environment in which you can attract those businesses from away to come and locate in your community. And in doing so, we find that a lot of communities wind up potentially giving away the farm in exchange for an uncertain outcome. And it turns out that if we not only think about how can we bring dollars into our community, but also keep dollars from flowing out of our community, that if they cycle in the economy more locally, that there are economic benefits to that. And I think the economic case for this is, if you think about it, on one hand, we try to put water in the economic tub by attracting new businesses and getting them to locate. But we also need to plug the drain. And so the buy local part of the equation is really about plugging the drain and preventing those leakages.
I'll begin to play devil's advocate early in this conversation, right? Since all of you are advocates of this idea. But I might be speaking for some listeners who say, wait a minute, capitalism doesn't work this way. This is essentially protectionism, if you will, that the idea is competition, let the best products, the best services, the lowest prices win in the marketplace, no matter where they're located. How do you answer that? We'll start with you, Garrett.
Well, I think, first of all, the data is not necessarily clear or consistent on whether or not you do wind up with a better deal at the end of the day, in part because there are certain aspects of the transaction, for instance, quality of service after the sale, those kinds of components that consumers value and may be willing to pay more for if indeed at the end of the day they are paying more. The other thing is, we know sort of economically what you pay isn't necessarily always what we pay. And what I mean by that is there are ways in which we subsidize companies either by covering the cost of health insurance for employees or through infrastructure investments that don't necessarily pan out at the end of the day to be in the best interest of consumers. But the bottom line, Keith, is that – and I appreciate the perspective that Jason and Kristen have brought in terms of the community aspects, because I think if we just look at this from a consumer perspective and only think of ourselves as consumers, then we may choose to behave in one way. But I think most of us have many hats that we wear in our communities, and we're concerned about having a community in which we know our neighbors, those kinds of things. And while those are not easily quantified from an economic standpoint, and other things certainly are, I think that that is increasingly what we are seeing in communities throughout the state. You see that with your farmers market examples. You see that with sort of the push for vibrant downtowns. And nothing within that is about regulating how people direct their choose to consume. It's creating an environment in which people have a mental map to appreciate that I have a choice here. And the outcomes of those choices differ based on where I choose to allocate my scarce resources as a consumer. And that's, for me as a consumer myself, has been an interesting exercise. But also I think for a lot of folks to begin to appreciate where their options are and to act on those in different ways, there may be different outcomes.
Kristen Smith, you're a brand person. You deal with brands. You know how important this is. When I see a buy local sticker, for example, on a car, one of my initial reactions is, oh, they're asking me to do something I might not otherwise do because the prices are probably for that product is probably higher. That is there a mentality out there that if you have to ask people to do something, you're asking them to overcome a presumption that those products or services are more expensive? In other words, does the existence of the very buy local brand suggest there are reasons you might not want to do it?
Well, I think, as Garrett said, first of all, I don't know that it's really necessarily true across the board that the price is always going to be better at a not locally owned business. And there's certainly a lot of research on there about that. But in addition to that, you know, a lot of the local businesses are kind of fighting an uphill battle with scarce resources, limited staffing, and much smaller budgets in terms of being able to market themselves in order to compete with some of the larger national brands and chains. And a big component of what the Buy Local organization and the movement tries to do is just serve as that reminder for people and help level the playing field a little bit for some of our locally owned businesses. And so that message on cars kind of serves the same purpose, hopefully, for us as the circular you might see in the Sunday paper every week, or the, you know, the relentless ads that you see on television that, again, our locally owned businesses can't often afford. But as Garrett said, when you factor in service, the quality, the variety of choices that you have for local products, and again, some of the differing research out there on price, I don't think it's always necessarily true that it's not a better value.
Jason Bird in Bangor, do you market the buy local movement as buy local? Is there a sort of a brand or a sort of an organized motto that you spread in your efforts?
We don't in a lot of respects, in part because there's such diversity, say, within downtown, even within the city of Bangor. So we market the individual businesses. We do market the sort of vibrancy or the feel of the city, and that there is a lot there, regardless of what you're shopping for.
Yeah. And you have to be careful because you don't want to, you know, offend a national chain that's right. You know, you're promoting
Correct.
All businesses in the city of Bangor, and you
well, that's,
yeah, so go ahead.
That's one of the points I wanted to make. I mean, I'm not, and I don't think any of us are here to demonize, you know, national retailers by any means. I think that they, you know, national retailers and even local stores have a place in the larger or broader economy. I think that for us and for me in particular, there's, you know, tangible evidence or tangible research to show the benefit, though. If you're going to spend a dollar, you know, a national retailer versus a locally owned retailer, it's profound, I think.
So, and this is important, I think.
Yeah.
Garrett, this is not a anti-Walmart movement. This is more because as Jason put it, there's a role to play for that in the economy, or are there those who say, no, there isn't a role for that?
Well, let's face it. On any issue, there's always going to be a spectrum of folks, right? And there are certainly folks who embrace this movement because it is anti-Walmart. You know, for them, it's about not wanting to support the big box. I think for other folks, it's about community and what kind of local community and economy do we want to live in. And quite frankly, for other folks, it's about this is where I can get the best product and the best service for my money. So I think, you know, no matter where you are on that continuum, there are very valid reasons for why you might choose to do one thing over the other. And I think at some level, what the whole quote-unquote buy local movement is about in many respects is just helping providing people with information to help them appreciate, again, the value of doing so. So that, let's just say, for example, you know, a product is a couple of cents or even a dollar or two more. Well, you may still choose to buy that locally. You know, in my own experience, I live in Damariscotta and Newcastle area. You know, there are certain products we can't find locally. So obviously we go elsewhere for those. But the products that we can find locally, even if they're cheaper elsewhere, you know, when you start factoring in gas and those kinds of things, it turns out to be a wash.
But the argument used to be between, not an argument, but the challenge used to be, oh, I can buy it, you know, at the local hardware store or the Lowe's or the Home Depot.
Right.
The internet now, though, has opened it up to a whole new world, and they also deliver it right to your door, and sometimes it's free shipping
sure.
and Amazon and all of that.
Sure.
That's very tempting, even more tempting than whether you're going to spend an hour of your time buying at a local store or spending an hour of your time buying it at a local big box store.
Right. And I think what's fascinating about that universe is, and I don't want to go too far down this foxhole, but is in truth, there are a variety of ways in which we, through our public decisions, through government, subsidize either an uneven playing field. So for instance, in the case of an Amazon, because they're not paying sales tax, in several states, you know, it's uneven, and that's why you see that national movement.
Well, we have the use tax.
right. Yeah, and how
wink,
many people
wink.
Voluntarily are paying? you know, and even locally in Maine, in the case of Walmart, what's very interesting is we actually provide taxpayer subsidies to Walmart to compete against Main Street mom-and-pop shops. And, you know, we have to ask ourselves or recognize at least that those are choices we're making in the public sphere that ultimately may influence what the bottom line is at the end of the day in terms of the prices we see.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, the number to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. When we come back, we'll talk to Frederick in South Portland. This is Maine Calling. Stay with us.
On the next Fresh Air, evidence that some criminals may have biochemical or neurological irregularities that make them more prone to commit violent crime. We talk with criminologist and psychiatrist Adrian Raine, the first researcher to do brain imaging studies of murderers. His new book is called The Anatomy of Violence, The Biological Roots of Crime. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. MPBN's main Capital Connection television channel offers daily coverage of the legislature in Augusta. Our coverage starts at 10 each weekday morning and includes coverage of House and Senate sessions, select committee hearings, and occasional interviews and press conferences. We also provide a rebroadcast of the day's coverage in the evening, usually at 7 o'clock. The main Capital Connection channel is available over the air and on most cable companies' digital tier. For more information, visit mpbn.net or call Audience Services at 800-884-1717. Again, 800-884-1717. On the tentative schedule for today, at around 1:30 this afternoon, a Criminal Justice Committee public hearing on legislation changing the laws on finding a person not guilty because of mental illness. And at 5, Governor Paul LePage's news conference on grading schools that will be recorded earlier in the day. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Endicott Home Furnishings in Scarborough, offering furniture without flame retardants for healthier living in small spaces. Learn more at condofurniture.com. And by Maine Farmland Trust, members supported and working hard to secure a future for farming in Maine, on the web at MaineFarmlandTrust.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, Buying Local. With me in the studio, Kristen Smith, president of Portland Buy Local and brand ambassador of Planet Dog, Garrett Martin, executive director of the Maine Center for Economic Policy, and in our Bangor studio, Jason Bird, business development officer and downtown coordinator for the city of Bangor. We'd like you to join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. You can email us, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to the phones as promised in a moment. But first, Garrett Martin, there's Maine Center for Economic Policy conducted a study on this very issue. What were the takeaway findings of that?
Sure. You know, a couple of years ago, we were asked to try and quantify the economic impacts of buying from locally owned businesses in Cumberland County. And it turns out that there are some models of this kind of research elsewhere in the country, but there had never been a study like this done for this area. And what we did was we worked with local business owners to basically have them open their books to us so that we could evaluate, you know, where are you purchasing your services from, and follow the path that a dollar would take spent at those businesses, and then compare it to a sample big box store. And what we found is quite interesting, Keith. You know, if for every $100 that you spend at a locally owned business, that generates an additional $58 in economic impact. By contrast, every $100 that is spent at a national chain creates an additional $33 in economic impact. So what does that mean? Well, you know, the reason for that difference is as the money flows through the economy, again, your local business is more likely to use local legal assistance, local advertising assistance. Their employees and managers are more likely locally based, although, you know, on the employee side, that could be a wash. But what we calculated was if in Cumberland County there was a 10% shift in consumption from national chains to locally owned businesses, that would generate an additional $127 million in economic activity, $127 million in economic activity, which would equate to about 875 jobs. So when you start putting it in those terms, you can quickly appreciate what the economic significance could be of this kind of thing, because I can guarantee you if I walked in the door today and said to you or to Mayor Brennan or to Governor LePage, have I got a deal for you? I've got a company that I want to locate in your community that's going to bring 875 jobs. I think they'd pay attention.
But they might have a problem with the notion of protecting a certain type of business. That is, it does, again, sounds like it's...
You know what? We are not advocating that policies be triggered in such a way or that the rules of the game are structured so that you're forced to go local. And in fact, I would argue that the rules of the game currently are structured in such a way that local businesses are actually operating at a disadvantage.
Yeah, I also want to talk about the fact that there's another element to this, which is buying U.S.-made products. Because right now you're talking about the employees and the local economic impact. But if you're buying the same shoes from that are made in China, it's a whole other story in terms of local economic impact.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But I want to go to the phones to South Portland and Frederick. Hi, Frederick. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Keith, this is a big responsibility put on me to bat lead off on such a wonderful show.
I'm sure that you will get on base.
I'm up to it. Hey, you know, you took a bit of my thunder when you mentioned about, I wanted to talk about buying online, which I really try not to do for the reasons that you mentioned. And particularly, I am really upset that Amazon is even mounting a campaign to not be forced to pay the same sales tax that all of our local businesses. But since you've already talked about buying online, which I encourage us all to do as little as possible, and to purchase from our local retail establishments, whether it's a local bookstore or record shop, I would encourage people also to use the U.S. mail service rather than paying bills online, because I'm very well aware of the threat that the Postal Service is under now. Albeit it's not really a local business, is it? However, it employs many more people than we can suffer to lose if we lose that all-important Postal Service, particularly to the up counties that really depend upon the Postal Service. So I think that using online bill paying is a form of, let's say, undermining our local economy. And I wonder what our guests would say to that.
Does anyone not pay their bills online? Anyone here in the panel, Kristen?
You know, my brother actually made that argument to me about 2 years ago, and I have actually made a pretty conscious effort to pay not all of my bills, and but a lot of my bills I try to still pay with a stamp and a check. You know, but I think it's a good point that, you know, the reality of the world that we live in today means that sometimes convenience is going to win out and sometimes price might win out. But the goal of our campaign is to just always be a reminder and ask people to consider a local option and think locally first. And again, sometimes you can't do that every time, and we understand that. And it's not about vilifying one option or another option, but again, just to remember how important having a robust local economy is to the fabric of our community and lots of other reasons as well. And again, to just try to be remind people regularly that these options are out there.
Is there a generational difference in attitudes about this? The younger consumers are an online entity. Is it going to be harder to convince them to think in these terms, or are they also open to these other business models, including supporting local business?
You know, I think some younger people may also see the quality of jobs that are coming out of, you know, as people are shopping online and there are fewer and fewer jobs right here at home. And some of the, you know, the studies about the economic and the working conditions at some of these really big providers of online retail, you know, I think that scares the younger generation quite a bit in the job prospects for people coming out of college with a really solid education and very few competitive jobs is pretty scary to them.
Keith, you know, I have two young children, and obviously one might say they might be predisposed to adopt their parents' worldview. But one of the things I'm really grateful for is living in a state like Maine, where people really have connections within their communities. They have a sense of place that's very strong and vibrant. And it's been interesting and gratifying in my kids' case, in part because of a lot of issues that have gone on locally. You know, we had a Walmart threatening to locate in the Damariscotta and Newcastle area a couple of years ago, and that led to some pretty interesting conversations around the dinner table around, you know, why we felt either that was an appropriate thing or why some people, you know, or why we felt it wasn't. But the fact of the matter is anyone has the ability to appreciate these choices and, again, make a decision for themselves. I think the main part is that they understand what's around the choice. And I just want to give one example. You know, for the Maine Center, when we engaged in this project looking at the local economy here in Cumberland County, that Christmas I sort of said to my family, okay, this year we're going to do an exercise. We're going to we're going to try to buy all our presents locally, because we'd never done that intentionally before, and it was fascinating. And I'm not going to say we bought everything locally. We bought almost everything locally, but you know, we wouldn't have normally done that. And it just being aware of it and changing our mental map again and thinking, oh yeah, I can get this at Rennie's, or I can get this at the local Radio Shack, or there's some other services. And you're right, you know, you're buying products that are similarly made elsewhere, but even still, in that case, the economic impacts are greater for the local community than not. So I would encourage folks who are listening to just think about that in their own lives. You know, if I shift just a little bit here, what does that mean, and what does that experience mm-hmm. reveal?
We have a Super Walmart opening up 2 miles from my house. It's a big, it's a big deal, you know, in town, and there are people who just are think it's awful, and some people who think it's the best thing that ever happened. I can tell you, it's probably not going to change a lot of what we do. We're going to go to the local places that we want the certain things from.
Sure.
If I need something, though, the way we look at it is there's Walmart stuff. There's, and each store, each place has its own sort of thing that we like to do. But it's based sort of not on money, but on quality and a lot of other more ethereal things. Anyway, who cares about what we do? To Bangor and Jody. Hi, Jody.
Hi there.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Well, I'd like to thank you for having this program. I'm a business owner in Bangor, and I've worked a little bit with Jason, and I think he's doing a fabulous job. And
I paid her to say that.
the money will stay within the community, at least.
That's right.
Good, good. Well, I'm a maker. I wholesale a line of product across the country and internationally a bit, and I have a retail business that specializes in pretty much entirely American-made products. And I just would like to underline two things. One is that it's not always automatically more expensive to buy something made in the U.S., and I think we can't talk about that enough. And companion to that is that when we do start talking about that, I think it's important to also speak about internalized versus externalized costs and how much that cheaper product actually costs our overall economy, and the value of paying sales tax and all these other taxes that go back into our roads and our bridges and our infrastructure. I don't think we get off cheaply sometimes when we think we do, and I think our race for the bottom in this regard has done a certain amount of damage to the working and middle class in the U.S. So I'd like to hear what you have to think about that, and thanks again.
All right, Jody, thank you for calling. Jason, we'll start with you, I guess, since you know Jody, right?
Yes. One of the points that she made in particular was the infrastructure. I think that people make the decision because it benefits their immediate bottom line. But when we look at the reports that come out that Maine's infrastructure has a D rating, we have budget cuts here, things that we have to trim back on at the state or local level. The impact is certainly statewide and actually affects everyone and their communities when we do hurt the sort of the retail sale. So I absolutely agree with what she said.
Yeah. Buddy.
Well, I think the point she brings up that again, as a sort of an economist and a policy wonk brings to mind is it is important for folks to not only appreciate the impact of these choices, but also to understand how the current way in which the rules are structured affect our choices. And I don't want to go too far afield here, but in terms of our monetary policy, arguably as a country where we are there favors importing cheap goods. And there are certainly prominent economists who have rightfully pointed out that if we evaluated that and thought about monetary policy that leveled the playing field again between production domestically and production abroad, that could achieve better economic outcomes for this country as a whole. So it starts at the local level, but it goes all the way up to the macroeconomic level.
1-800-399-3566. We're going to take a break in a minute here, but first we're going to go to Bar Harbor and Tony. Hi, Tony. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi. I'm also a business owner. I'm actually opening a business in Bar Harbor right now, getting ready for the season. I have a business in downtown Bangor. I know Jason very well and Jody as well. I wanted to make a comment about the charitable giving that local businesses do mm-hmm. for the community. That you can, we're constantly giving $20 gift certificates and items for our local auctions and things that maybe the bigger chains wouldn't even look at it, giving money. And that's just a constant weekly thing that we do to benefit the community.
And advertising as well.
And it helps advertise for us.
National advertisers usually buy three deep on radio stations or have media buyers based upon buys like that. But smaller independent businesses contribute to local media in terms of advertising, newspapers. That's one of the elements that I'm sure you looked at.
That's right. We did evaluate that. And, you know, it is interesting that 48% of the charitable contributions of locally owned businesses are here at home in Greater Portland, and that additional 52% of those are in the rest of the state of Maine. So almost all that charitable giving happens locally. And I think what the caller speaks to is, and I'm, again, aware of this in the constellation of our own community, he's right. It's the local businesses who are there supporting the school, who are there supporting other charitable endeavors. And in terms of the broader fabric of the community, that can't be overstated.
All right. Going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments, questions, the number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
I'm Jane Clayson. Coming up on the next On Point, housing prices break out of their slump. We'll look at the rebound and what it means for the nation's recovery. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join us for On Point this evening at 11. The Garrison Keillor Solo Roadshow will be at the Collins Center for the Arts at the University of Maine in Orono, and MPBN members are entitled to a special 10% discount on tickets. An Evening with Garrison Keillor will feature the charming, witty, and always entertaining Keillor sharing anecdotes and spinning tales about growing up in the Midwest, the people of Lake Wobegon, and late-in-life fatherhood. The event takes place on Thursday, May 23rd at 7 p.m., For more details on the performance and information on how to take advantage of the MPBN member discount, visit mpbn.net and click on Events, and then An Evening with Garrison Keillor. Note, this is not to be confused with the July Bangor Waterfront full staging of A Prairie Home Companion. Coming up after Maine Calling at 1 o'clock, it's Your World. The guests are Mikhail Herberg, Research Director on Asian Energy Security for the National Bureau of Asian Research, and Seth Kleinman, Head of Energy Strategy for Citigroup Global Markets. That's It's Your World, coming up after Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, different ways to buy local. With me in the studio, Kristen Smith, president of Portland Buy Local and brand ambassador of Planet Dog, Garrett Martin, executive director of the Maine Center for Economic Policy, and in our Bangor studio, Jason Bird, business development officer and downtown coordinator for the city of Bangor. Join the conversation. Do you buy local? What products do you like to buy locally but can't find? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. And we have an email from a listener in Brunswick who asks, how do you define local in terms of locally produced, processed, distributed, or purchased products and services, and in terms of geography? Kristen, we'll start with you.
For our organization, we define it as a locally owned business. We don't get down to where the products that that business sells are produced or manufactured, but rather a business that is owned locally and independently, a business that has less than 10 outlets with the majority of them in Maine and where the ownership is local and invested in our community as well. And certainly, I think we've started to touch on the importance of products that are made in the USA, both from an economic perspective, but also from a health perspective and there's so much more regulation of what goes into products here in the United States than some of the things that are coming from overseas. And I feel like it's, you know, every week there's another tainted something coming from somewhere else. But for the purposes of Portland Buy Local and our educational campaign, it's really about locally owned, independently owned businesses.
All right, let's stay in Brunswick, but go to Adam. Hi, Adam.
Hi, how's it going today?
Good, thanks.
Great. I just wanted to share sort of an anecdote about the idea of food sort of as a microcosm for the local movement. And about 6 years ago or 7 years ago, there was a large E. coli outbreak with spinach. And I remember working in a restaurant in Portland. We are actually at the time serving local spinach produced down the road in Portland. And I can remember it being sort of a shock because customers were mortified that we were serving spinach because they had been hearing, you know, the news about the E. coli outbreak. And it was this really sort of revealing moment for me in the fact that, you know, local food systems, but also the Go Local movement provides a form of autonomy and resiliency in communities. So I just wanted to see what your panelists had to say about that.
Well, I think a very interesting point, and just going back to the previous the comment about what's local, you know, local at some level is how you define it. You know, it can be at your community specifically. It can be in your county. It could be in the state possibly. And we see that because when we talk about a local food system, at some level many folks are talking about that statewide effort. But specific on the caller's point, it's fascinating. There's actually a proposal before the legislature right now to encourage, not to encourage, but to provide a mechanism to track how much local purchasing schools are doing for their food systems or food service. And when we looked at this issue, there's some interesting research that was done by Todd Gabe at the University of Maine. And what it shows is that for every dollar that you spend purchasing food from a local farmer, that generates an additional 80 cents of economic activity versus every dollar that you spend using a grocery store as a proxy, that generates an additional 18 cents in economic activity. So again, you can see the economic arguments, but I think the point the caller is also speaking to is this issue of quality of the food and at least familiarity with where it's coming from. And that's a very interesting area of growth in our economy, is this sort of agricultural side of the equation.
And Jason Bird, working for the city of Bangor, again, here's an area where you have to sort of walk the line a little bit because you don't want to disparage grocery stores in the town and sort of make this case. How do you promote local food without, I don't know, alienating, you know, the Hannaford?
I think it's fairly easy because Hannaford is a significant player in the community, and I think that the size of, say, the Bangor Farmers Market or other local food movement is so small, so we're not really... We have yet to really make a significant impact when we, you know, when we do promote local foods. We're not there yet, but we will. But I just think, in the grand scheme of things, in sheer numbers wise, we're not necessarily offending them because it's sort of marginal at this point.
All right. Yeah. Let's go to Bristol and Allison. Hi, Allison. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi there. I'm just calling to reiterate what Boo was talking about. I mean, I'm sorry, Garrett was talking about with the community that we're building by buying locally. I'm also feeling really great about just getting home from buying my gas from a local gas station and guinea pig food from the local hardware store and printer ink from the local office supply store. So you guys were a great thing for me to listen to in the car on the way home. But in all of these trips this morning, my little children are saying hi to people, saying please and thank you, learning that we don't eat candy right before lunch, all these things that are an important part of the whole community education. And I think, you know, focusing both on the, I guess, behavioral economics of it, that we do want our children to have a strong sense of place. And so bringing them with us to the local stores really gives them that.
Isn't there a case to be made, though, that with, you know, that's, that the some of these larger places provide a larger number of jobs for people in places that really need them?
So I think this is a fascinating topic, Keith, and I know we're near the end of this, but, you know, going back to how you define local, it's look at what's happening in our economy as a result of this. You can't deny, for instance, that Walmart locating in Presque Isle creates jobs in Presque Isle. And part of the reason why it creates jobs in Presque Isle is it sucks out consumption from other local communities. So when that mall went up in Presque Isle, Fort Fairfield, their downtown went dark. To a large extent. So this is the challenge we have when we look at these issues, is it hopefully doesn't have to be a zero-sum game, but there are clearly winners and losers. And in fact, if you looked at a regional level and you said, what are the job impacts and what are the economic impacts, again, a local orientation where you're preventing those dollars from leaking out of your economy, you're recycling them as much as possible, is actually a more robust, vibrant, and resilient economy.
Vivia in Brunswick, do you agree?
Yes, I do. My question is perhaps too broad for this panel and maybe even for me to think about, but I've been disturbed for years about the fact that the Walmarts of the world provide, yes, jobs in China and things are made cheaply, but you're using all these resources to get them here. And when we talk about saving the planet's resources, it just seems we have to also re-educate our whole economy. How do you make things that last profitable rather than having to get things over and over again cheaply made? And things that are local that are much better and healthier for you over the things that are cheaper.
Yeah, Vivia, thank you. We're almost out of time. There are those who have made the case that our assumptions about it's greener to buy local because of transportation costs, et cetera, can be challenged on a certain level, particularly with the analysis of sea shipping as opposed to air freight. We don't have time to get into that, but there are those schools of thought that say, you have to look a little more closely before making an assumption that buying local is greener.
Fair, I think that's fair. I think there are a variety of ways in which you analyze that question. Yeah.
I think the life cycle, though, of lower quality products that are designed mm-hmm. specifically to be the cheapest possible thing you can put on the market that you know are going to fail in a certain period of time is also something to be factored into that argument.
Brooms, absolutely. I think, are that. We have to buy a broom every 3 weeks, and yet we keep doing it. I don't know why we don't buy a good broom. Anyway, before we end this, are there websites or places that you want people to make sure that they can go and see to learn more about it, Kristen?
Well, I would love to encourage people to look at portlandbylocal.org at our online directory. You can also, of course, find our printed directory scattered all over town to see some of our 400 members out there and give people ideas for lots of ways to shift even 10% of your shopping, as Garrett mentioned, certainly far beyond just your retail shopping.
And Keith, in terms of the report that we did looking at Cumberland County in particular, that is available on our website at www.mecep.org, and it's conveniently located on the homepage, so folks can access it there.
Jason Bird, any websites or upcoming events or anything in Bangor?
Absolutely. I would say for people to get a good sense of the vibrancy in downtown Bangor and Bangor in general, I'd go to downtownbangor.com. But you had mentioned events. Great segue. Kids Central Festival in downtown Bangor has music, art, games. A lot of the businesses downtown are sort of opening their doors. They're doing everything from making soda to a whole bunch of stuff. And I guess maybe the last good point to make is that that stuff doesn't happen when we have chain stores and all this other stuff. When these local stores become a community partner, we have all these other things, these tangible benefits that help make the community what it is.
All right. And Chris and I, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Planet Dog for a minute, just about for 20 seconds, rather.
It's such an interesting conversation for us because we manufacture the vast majority of our products here in the United States. And yet we're also, in business with a lot of small, locally owned, independent retailers all over the country that are really struggling. And so it's, there's a lot to say there. But certainly our company store is locally owned and gives back a tremendous amount to the community. You can see our gift baskets in almost every donation, every auction in the
And there's ample
in the
well
Holt's
free
County.
Customer parking as well. Thank you all for being here
Thank
today.
You,
really
Keith.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Scott McAuliffe answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board. We had help from Rich Tozier in our Bangor studio and the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcasts by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. Tomorrow on the program, what you need to know about detecting, preventing, and treating hearing loss. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.